Welcome to our special session of our summit series. We are very honored and excited to have this evening Dr. Michael Crow, President of Arizona State University. We've been fortunate to be partners with Dr. Crow in Arizona State for over 10 years. And under Dr. Crow's leadership, it's been truly remarkable what Arizona State has been able to accomplish. One of the things that is aligned us with ASU is we share similar visions, which is, you know, we've stated overall from the summit, our goal is to give everybody an equal opportunity to participate in the future. What Dr. Crow has said right boldly on their website, for our society to achieve its ideal, it cannot be unequal its distribution of its most important asset, education, which we couldn't agree with more. Just a couple quick highlights. People are familiar that ASU is the largest public university in the United States. Also, for the last 5 years in a row, it's been voted by US News and World Report the number one innovation university in the United States. It also has the number one ranking for its hidden objectives of the UN's sustainability goals. And we can go on and on and on about the accomplishments of ASU under Dr. Crow. So with no more ado, I'd like to kind of kick things off and first say welcome. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Happy to be here, Mike. Glad we could get together.
Great. I'd just like to hear from you. I mean, it's obviously what's going on with the coronavirus has been just unbelievably devastating for many people and the economy and so forth. One of the silver linings is basically in the digital learning space, the future has been accelerated to the present, and that's positive. On the flip side, it's in some ways like we've gone back to the 1950s and we're having dinner every night at home and they're not going anywhere. And I'm kind of curious from your standpoint, what's been, we'll talk about challenges, but is there silver linings that you've seen that you've been able to kind of focus on in terms of what's happened over the last couple months with these challenges?
We're in the middle of the first significant global pandemic in 100 years. My dad used to say, when I'd get something wrong, do I have your attention now? we could say that to all of us, does the world have our attention now? We live on this almost 8 billion person planet with unbelievable complexity, completely connected in every possible way. And, a virus starts somewhere and then pretty soon it's, covered the entire planet and we've never encountered it before. And so what it means is probably all of us have been a little bit sleepy, not quite ready for the speed of change, the rate of change. So now we've got technological changes that are creating all kinds of social dynamic. We've now got biological changes that are a function of the complexity of our species interacting in the way that we interact with all the other species. We've got all these things happening, and our institutions, for the most part, haven't really assumed that they're in a different world. Do I have your attention now? And so the different world, the silver lining is, I think everybody's attention has been had. Everybody's focused and everybody's thinking, well, what can we do to operate in different ways, to educate through any circumstance, to speed up education? And so this notion of how we got to where we are, it doesn't really make much difference, but we're there. And so I think that the silver lining for me, if there is one, is that this is a fantastic moment to figure out how we can be more adaptive to all of the complexities that we're facing now and will face in the future.
Yeah, you guys, ASU and you were pioneers in identifying sustainability as a key issue. I think you created the first sustainability school. And I think importantly, not only was it a vertical that you were early with, but you really apply that kind of on a horizontal basis across the university. And now you got the Global Sustainability Institute. How does that play into your thinking about kind of the future of learning, the future of society, and the role that ASU will play in it?
Well, a lot of people listening might not agree with this, but it turns out that we don't yet have a sustainable relationship with the natural system and what I call the built system, the built environment versus the natural environment. So the built environment is everything that we've constructed. The natural environment is everything that we rely on from which we build everything. And so to be sustainable, the natural environment cannot be depleted or altered in a significant way. Otherwise, we won't have the supply lines that we need. And so we set out almost 20 years ago to say that this needs to be a central theme of all universities and all educational enterprises to prepare us to be able to be sustainable so that we can have for as far into the future as humans go, this sustainable relationship with the natural environment. So we built schools, programs, institutes. We launched the Global Futures Laboratory, the Global Institute of Sustainability. We have thousands of people involved in this. We are going to a zero carbon footprint in our own life as an institution, mostly because it's what we need to do to lay the intellectual foundation for managing the complexity of the world that lies ahead. COVID-19 is, when we go back and analyze all of this, going to be a function of rapid urbanization, rapid globalization, and rapid unpredictable outcomes from such a complex human interface with the world that we're living in. And so obviously we're not there yet. We don't have this worked out yet, and we need to.
Yeah, a few tenets of the new America University are: you want to be known for who you include, not who you exclude. And along with that, you know, how you're a comprehensive research institution that really reflects the community you're in. And talk about what both of those mean as it relates to the priorities of ASU and how you're trying to accomplish that.
You know, so we live in one of the most important political experiments ever undertaken on the planet. That is can you actually mount up a full-scale democracy that actually can achieve the idealized forms of justice and liberty and happiness and so forth that people want to see achieve. That's why we went through all the things that we've gone through. And then to do that, then that would mean that education sits at the root of the attainment of many of those ideals. And if education becomes a scarce commodity, as we've continued to evolve, if high school used to be a scarce commodity, if college becomes a scarce commodity, if colleges become measured only, you're only a great college if you turn away 95% of the people that apply, that's the only way to become a great college, then we're in for a world of hurt. We'll find that our colleges will be then basically the anointers of a new kind of aristocracy rather than a new kind of democracy. Private universities, fantastic as they are, private colleges, fantastic as they are, they don't have the same responsibility as a public college or a public university. So what we've tried to do at ASU is to build an institution built on egalitarian access to unbelievable academic quality, where we're going to measure ourselves based on the success of our students and the success of our community, as opposed to who we're leaving out as the measure of success. You know, if you get a letter from a college and the first thing it says is, "Welcome to a college and we turned away 50 people and selected you," well, that's great if that's a private college. That's less good if that's a public college.
So, one of the mantras at ASU, when you talk to anybody there, it's beyond the leadership, it's about scale, it's about speed, but it's about quality. And doing any one of those three is not easy. To do all three together is really, really challenging. How do you do it? I mean, how do you think about it? How do you manage it? How do you accomplish it?
There's actually four. So it's scale, speed, and quality, matching the socioeconomic diversity of our society. So it's egalitarian scale, speed at the speed of reality, that is the real life, and then quality at the level of any university that's out there. So the way that you do it, the first way you do it is by changing culture. So we had a faculty which was and is unbelievably capable and unbelievably open-minded and no longer interested in just the historic bureaucratic models of academia, but actually interested in, I want my institution to have more impact, deeper impact. I want some of the things I see in society, some of the unfairness that's out there and some of the inequalities that are out there. They really want to work at these, but to work at these, they know they have to work at scale. So we've seen the embracing of technology as a mechanism to work at scale. We've seen the embracing of change as a way to be more effective. And we've seen the notion of the embracing of innovation culturally and innovation pedagogically as a way to be more impactful. So it's really been the creation of all those things together.
Yeah, and I mentioned it earlier, but the fact that ASU has been the number one innovation university in the United States for the past 5 years in a row by the U.S. World News Report, congratulations for that.
Well, you know the joke. You know the joke about that, though, Mike, is that it's a low bar. So.
Well, that's but you're clearing it very, very yes. nicely.
We're high jumping 6'3". That's right.
That's good. And so you touched on this, but how do you do that in a systematic and a sustainable way? I mean, you know, 5 years in a row, and again, I know you're not slowing down. How do you think about how you got to here and how you move ahead so that as you continue to do all these things that feeds on itself and you're still able to do it with a scale?
Yeah, so it's actually about culture change. And so it's about, you know, making innovation a continuous process, an ongoing process, never being satisfied. We've done this in the past, but what else do we need to do to add to that? This notion of every day is a new day in the sense of, you know, we're not going to sit back and say that we've attained some kind of status because we've become exclusive. And so what we're actually doing is moving in the opposite direction. So, you know, we just launched in the middle of the pandemic a thing called ASU for You, take a look at it, where we took every asset that we have and every asset that we could find that could help someone at home, you know, educating their kids at the kitchen table, help someone who couldn't finish high school, help someone who needs to find a path to college. So that's a new thing and new assets and new ways of doing things. We haven't announced it yet, but we're going to a whole new technological alliance that we are forming with a company in California that's going to create whole new ways to teach really complicated things in exciting and emotionally connecting kind of ways through, you know, virtual reality and augmented reality and avatars and all kinds of things. And so it's this notion of continuous evolution and continuous innovation, which within academia is usually left to the realm of the individual faculty member. So we have that, but then we also have it relative to the institution. And that's really the cultural sustaining mechanism.
Yeah, and as a public university, as an academic institution, I think you've been, you know, very clear that, you know, this is not just for ASU, it's really for society, it's for the community. Talk about, I mean, you guys, nice language. But ASU has been on the forefront of the online learning. I'm going to talk much more about online learning in a bit. But, you know, you were early and you learned a lot. And you learned a lot about how you did things online and what works and what doesn't and what you can do better. And now making that, so what you put out to help, you know, communities, you know, get online and so forth. And you know, my understanding is we're evaluating, putting on a pedagogy type of event, online pedagogy, not just for the ASU, but really for the broad community. Right. I mean, how do you think about that opportunity and the importance of that, what you've learned?
So where we started was we went to technology to help us to perform better on campus with a very diverse student body. And when we learned that we could do that, we then realized that we could move to a second realm with technology and help people to create learning environments for them to finish college or to go to college if they couldn't finish or couldn't go normally. And then from that, then we saw other things that we could do. And then from that, other things, and so much to the point now where we, you know, we've got 60,000 plus students in full digital immersion, online learning, which is asynchronous. We were able to move 75,000 college students to fully synchronous immersive learning using this technology, the Zoom technology. We also took our 11 charter schools completely to that modality, and our digital preparatory academy is asynchronous but works in that same modality. And what we learned from that is that we have many more ways to create teaching and learning environments and many more ways to collaborate with other institutions to empower other institutions. And so for us, the breakthrough is that we realize that with an adaptive faculty, with an innovative faculty, with an innovative institution empowered by our technology partners, empowered by a willingness to be innovative, we can now break down all the barriers that have limited our educational attainment in the past relatively easily, if we could just all get behind this and find a way to do this. And there's a lot of grousing out there. Some of the curmudgeon faculty that are old geezers like me, they're out there wandering around. They're saying, this stuff never works. I mean, it doesn't work because you don't know anything about it. It doesn't work because you never tried it. We have been doing this for years, and we've been getting fantastic learning outcomes, measured learning outcomes, both on campus with our fully immersive students, now in our Zoom mode, in our fully sync mode, and then in our asynchronous online mode, all three modes.
Talk about EdPlus and EdPlus, which is ASU Online. 63,000 students, I believe, now in the EdPlus program. I've had the opportunity to spend a fair amount of time there, and you know, both with the studios that have been created, the coaches, just the different things that go on there that really make that experience exceptional. I mean, how do you think about? How do you think that? Evolution of that is, what are some of the kind of secret sauce or things that you've learned from that experience, and how do you think, what do you think the biggest opportunities are going to be created going forward? And, so and for again, us,
Yeah. So for us, Ed Plus is the crack unit that's supporting all of our technology enhanced learning outcomes, both on campus in synchronous mode and in online asynchronous mode. And so the key secrets there are partner, partner, partner. We have almost 300 technology and learning service partners that we're working with from the private sector, partner, partner, partner. Number two, hire the best people possible who understand and respect what an academic faculty is. You know, great curriculum designers and instructional designers and knowledge navigators and videographers and communicators and success coaches, and then connect them with our faculty in a mutually respectful kind of way. That's been a second element of the secret sauce. Great leadership. We have a great leader in our team with Phil Regeer and Leah Lummel, just fantastic individuals that can make things happen. We have to be able to move fast. Speed is really important. Most universities can't move quickly. In this space, you have to move quickly. You have to do deals. You have to do partnerships. You have to do relationships. I think at the heart of it, though, is that you have to have a deep purpose. You have to understand that your purpose is not to exist as a Middle Ages a learning institution protecting the, you know, just the core of the interest of the faculty. Yes, you have to do that, but you actually have to figure out how you're going to educate people across a society that when universities were first devised, no one imagined a society of 335 million people like we have in the United States. Nobody imagined a globe working at, you know, the heartbeat of a global speed like we're seeing now. And so you've got to be able to innovate at speed, and the team has got to be able to do that, and the culture has to be able to do that, and that's really what we've done.
So, and just to make a point, the way that I think about it, maybe like sustainability, it's not a, online's not a vertical. It basically, as you said, cross-sects the entire university and supports all the university's digital efforts.
Yeah, and so not just that. I mean, a couple other things that we did is that, you know, we have over, you know, 250 online degree programs. We have thousands of courses. We have unbelievable technology partners, unbelievable technology capability. We never made anyone do anything. We never said to any academic unit, you have to do this. You have to go online. We don't have charging either. So we have this as a service unit supporting the entirety of the university, full immersion on campus. Well, in fact, that's what we call it, full immersion on campus, technology enhanced learning. Now we have synchronous immersion, technology enhanced learning, and then we have digital immersion, technology enhanced learning, and it's the support of all of those with this team that has really made it work for us.
And you talk about over 300 technology partners today. How many did you have 10 years ago?
Right. That's one of the reasons we fell in love with you guys at GSV. I mean, so, you know, we had a couple.
What did you say?
Yeah, we started the ASU GSV EdTech Summit, which is a fantastic meeting and fantastic event. And, you know, unfortunately, we weren't able to hold it in the spring this year, but you guys are doing this this event here. And so I think we found most of our partners from that series of meetings. I mean, this has been a fantastic way for us to listen, to learn, to engage. You know, universities typically think, well, we're really smart. We can do all these things ourselves. Yeah, we can. We just can't do them particularly quickly. And so GSV's interaction with us and the meeting has been really the root of our partnerships.
Well, thank you. Talk about again, you're early to explore the possibilities of adaptive technology, personalized learning. What have you learned from that? Where do you think we're at from the opportunity or possibilities with adaptive learning and personalized learning? What's been better? What's been not as good or needs to get better? How do you think of that?
Well, here's what's happened to us as a society. We decided that high SAT scores and high ACT scores were measurements of the totality of intelligence. They're not. They're measurements of certain kinds of intelligence. for certain moments in a person's life. And so once we figured out that there was this wide breadth of types of intelligence, we realized then that we needed to provide different kinds of learning pathways for little choke point, what we call critical classes, killer classes that you have to get through. And once we realized in something we did about 10 years ago, that 1,000 kids taking a college algebra class or a college pre-calculus class had 1,000 different ways of learning, then we knew that we'd been teaching wrong. Then we stepped back to adaptive learning, personalized learning as a tool. Then we learned that you could change all the outcomes in these classes and that we'd been sort of stupid in the past and really needed to do new ways of pedagogical design. Now we've expanded that. We just launched a 12-course, 36-hour undergraduate biology curriculum that connects from course 1 all the way to course 12 in a completely adaptive format, goes back to what you don't know from high school, back to what you forgot from middle school, and then gives you this unbelievable learning platform. We've got thousands now of online biology majors in an unbelievable STEM program with 3D laboratories in virtual reality that you're going into, and now what we call this BioSpine curriculum in adaptive learning. We're applying that on campus, we're applying that online, and then now as we go forward, we're going to begin applying this in virtual reality. We're going to begin applying this with the student or the learner as an avatar science explorer using all of these tools, including adaptive learning and so forth. So we're like unbelievably on fire in this space. We think this is a game changer in terms of STEM education. This is a game changer.
And you talk about avatars, you talk about game changing, and if my memory serves me right, one, you were very intrigued by games as a learning way to learn early. How do you see the future of games and gaming to learn subjects and be effective as we look ahead?
I think it's going to be powerful once we can get the emotionality of a game or the emotionality of an avatar experience, the emotionality of a full immersive experience tied into an adaptive learning platform tied into, you know, a pedagogically sound learning experience, we're going to see learning take off and be unconstrained. And so you might remember, Mike, a couple years ago at ASU GSB, you know, I put up a list of all the things I wished that we had. Yeah. And one of them was this virtual reality game-oriented way of learning. And so I think that there's a way to make learning exciting. So people don't realize, and faculty members don't realize that, yeah, their best students are so thrilled with how they're teaching. And most of the students are like, what is he or she talking about? Okay. And also the level of independent learning and group learning can be greatly enhanced in these kind of game-based learning environments. And so we're really, really excited about where technology has brought us. We're right at the cusp of making these things happen.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting. It's exciting to see the things going on everywhere, but I think there's a lot of great energy and excitement at ASU for that. Talk to me. You talked about business partnerships. You know, the Starbucks relationship was very innovative and was kind of a breakthrough relationship, and that evolved into what became InStride. Talk about first how this all happened with Howard Schultz at Starbucks. How's it going? What have you learned? What was the thought process behind kind of effectively spinning out but still be integrated with ASU within Stride? I think it's pretty fascinating.
So Starbucks started when Howard and I were a part of a Markle Foundation National Commission on the Future of Work called Rework America. And we started talking on the side during the meetings. He was the co-chair of the overall meeting, and I was the co-chair of the part about individual learning. And so off to the side, we said, well, we got to get something going. And so we said, well, could we take this really human capital devoted company like Starbucks with their partners and this university that was deeply committed to egalitarian outcomes, and could you come up with something? So we came up with a thing called the College Achievement Program. We launched that. We've graduated now after this semester, more than 4,000 people. We've got 12,000 learners that are involved among their partners. We've seen hugely positive outcomes Starbucks has within the impact on the company. That's led to then a college pathways program for people not qualified to go to the university to earn their way into the university. That's led to other programs, other training, other kinds of opportunities. And so what's happened is that we've created a way in which human capital can be greatly enhanced inside the Starbucks company to the benefit of the Starbucks shareholder, to the benefit of the Starbucks partner, what they call their employees, partners, both. There's a mutual benefit. This is, I think, the way that companies need to go. And all we had to do was stand up and say, we want to do this with our technology-based learning platform. So it's been a fabulous experience that now through InStride, we're expanding into our relationship with Uber. We're expanding into our relationship with Adidas. We're expanding into our relationship with Aramark and lots of other companies that are in the process of being engaged.
And the, and bringing in Texas Pacific Group as an investor partner, that was unique as well.
Yeah, well, so they are you know, a investment firm that then put together a social impact investment fund called the Rise Fund with a lot of investors that are interested in two things: financial return for their money, yes, but only when they can get very high levels of measured social impact. So it turns out education is the place where you get the most social impact return for your dollar invested in a private sector venture. And so they facilitated the birthing of this certified public B corporation, InStride, which is based in Los Angeles. The team in Los Angeles, working with the team here, working with our other university partners, is out there building these learning outcome relationships with companies. So it's a lot more than just the benefit, the employee tuition benefit. What we're interested in is the success of these companies through the success of their human capital.
Yeah, and you know, Starbucks, and I don't know if you know this, but when I back in my research analyst days, I was lucky enough to cover Starbucks, and Howard Schultz at that time, 25 years ago plus, had this vision about healthcare, and how be providing healthcare benefits was going to be actually a great return on investment because it was going to get better people. They're going to be happier. They're going to stay there longer. And he proved it right. It was, it's fascinating to see the education. He was kind of a pioneer with you to do this. And now you're seeing other corporations sort of having that enlightened view. And, and we do think that that's a mega wave that we're in the forefront of.
Howard and I were doing a Zoom 2 days ago. He's, you know, got the Schultz Family Foundation out there hitting the ball hard.
Yeah.
The ball hard on opportunity youth, how to get millions of people we have in the United States pre-COVID who either aren't in school or aren't working under the age of 24 and above the age of 16. And so how do we make these things happen? And so Howard and I are both of the view is that you just take your assets, you put your kit together, you enhance your kit through partnerships, and in our case, through technology, and you move out onto the battlefield with your kit and you make stuff happen. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, he's very special. I know he's working very hard. I just heard from him recently. Talk about the now Santana is the next kind of, for lack of a better word, spin out that's still, you know, deeply connected to the university. What's Santana about, and how do you think of that as we look ahead?
So Doug Becker and his team did a fantastic job building up Laureate and getting a million students and making universities work all over the world. And there's still an unbelievable shortage of access to higher education in many parts of the world. So I knew Doug and liked Doug very much, and then said to Doug, well, what if Laureate had had access to a great, large scale, powerful research university in the United States? What could you have done? And so the result of that conversation was then the launching of Santana, which is venture backed, headquartered here in Phoenix, working on a global basis. And so what we're looking for there is expansion of capacity through international partnerships. So Santana is a learning management services company that's then working to help universities to be successful, help them to grow, help them to be more impactful, help them to modernize, help them to build relationships and partnerships. And we ASU, we're one of those partners by providing the kind of technological tools that we have. This notion of powered by ASU. We just did a huge deal, not through Santana, but with the Air Force that is out there now, where we're working with them on enhancing learning outcomes and so forth and so on. And that'll be detailed at some point in the future. But with Santana, what we're after is, you know, how do you scale higher education in places where it could make, you know, a material difference to the social, economic, sustainability outcomes of huge regions of the huge areas of the planet.
So you know, as Warren Buffett said, you don't see who's swimming naked until after the tide goes out. What do you see happening kind of, we call it AD after disease. We had BC before Corona, now we have AD after disease. What do you see happening in higher education? And what are some of the big changes that you see taking place over the next, you know, over the next 24 months?
Yeah, so, you know, there's not going to be any AD. There's not going to be any after disease. Corona, COVID-19 doesn't go away. Yeah. It's now a part of the portfolio of viruses, and it's the next of several new viruses that are going to be emerging just in the way that we have evolved. And so AD, you know, after this particular manifestation of this pandemic, now, like I said at the outset, I mean, do I have your attention now? And so those colleges and universities who understand this change will make adjustments to their use of technology, their speed of decision-making, the way that their markets their clients and markets are shaped and so forth. And some won't be able to do that. And then they'll have to partner with others. So I see new leagues of schools forming. I see new alliances forming. You know, colleges and universities are pretty tough. They can survive over very long periods of time. Very few institutions have 1,000-year peers that have existed for 1,000 years in their sector. We do. You know, we have U.S., you know, Harvard's what, 384 years old this year. There's no company that's 384 years old in the United States, started in the United States. And so what I mean by that is these are durable institutions, but have now reached a point where they're going to have to now become more adaptable than they've ever been. So one of the things I see happening is more leagues that aren't related to sports, more partnerships, more alliances, more reliance on technology, you know, probably ways to become more efficient and more efficacious. So there's the three E's: efficiency, effectiveness, and efficacy. All three of those are going to have to be enhanced, you know, within the resources that are available. And then I think also, and we're sort of a prototype of this, in our class of institution, you're going to see the emergence of new schools, new kinds of things. So, you know, we call ourselves a prototype of a fifth wave university, a national service university, that is by design different than others. It's scalable, high speed, adaptable, engageable, works at a sort of economic scale, as opposed to local scale.
So you talk about different type of leagues form. I want to pitch you maybe after the Zoom on a concept I have, what I call the Developers League around engineering, but that's for a different day. Credit transfer, as you talk about these alliances and sort of this new world that we are entering, you know, the ability to transfer credits from one institution to another, you know, obviously ASU is massive in this area today. What do you think of the future of kind of credit transfer is? Is there opportunity there to make that a better system, create more of a universal currency, for lack of a better description?
Yeah, we need to do a lot in that realm. And so it's really a sad state of affairs that more than half the people in the United States that have received a grant from our generous country, a Pell Grant from our generous country, we're unbelievably generous, have never graduated. And they never graduated, often because they became discouraged, they got sidetracked. It wasn't easy to transfer credit. There was all this problem, that problem. More than half the people that have ever gone to college in the United States, and this is, I think, we're one of, if not the only major industrialized country that suffers from this. More than half the people that went to college never graduated. Now, arrogant jerks sit around and say, well, that's because you weren't smart enough or whatever. Far from it. You know, we know who's out there in the 30 million plus people who didn't graduate from college, who wanted to graduate from college, and what happened to them. And one of the things that broke down is that our little cottage industry system of academia, with this little house and this little house and this little house, and we don't take this and we don't take that, and we don't use that plug, and we don't use that kind of electricity, and we don't use this and we don't use that. That has basically helped to thwart millions of people from being able to move forward with their life and discouraged others from even entering the game. And so we've got to work this out. We've got to figure out how we can trade and stack and connect credits and learning in ways that do not diminish in any way rigor, do not diminish in any way measured learning outcomes. But there's just such a lack of respect for the individual student, in my view, and there's such a lack of understanding of the impact of people not being able to finish. Imagine 30 million plus people that started college and didn't finish, and people say that's them. It's not them. It's only partly them. It's us. It's the academy itself, you know, being cruel, in my view.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Thank you. Talk about the global opportunity for ASU, and you know, you've always had a kind of a global vision. What do you see happening there? What are some of the key initiatives or priorities that you have? Are there geographic regions that are more interesting, or the partnerships that are more interesting? You talk about alliances. How do you think of that?
Well, I mean, we are working on alliances. We have our PLUS Alliance, which is the King's College London and the University of New South Wales. We've launched a new on-the-ground engineering school called TEDDY in London, right in the middle of the pandemic. So it's a little bit harder than normal. The Engineering Design Institute of London. We've got great partner institutions at Dublin City University in Ireland, with Ben-Gurion University in Israel, with other universities around the world. We're working on, we manage the Higher Education Engineering Alliance Program, HEAP, out of Vietnam, with a range of American and European companies, the American government, the Vietnamese government. We've got plans all over the world with Centana, where we're working. We've got students from 140 or so countries on campus, 13,000 international students on campus. A lot of ambiguity relative to that right now in the COVID moment. And so the key is that education and global education is a way to accelerate the evolution of our isolated, rural, and impoverished planet. And what I mean by that is, you know, we still have a per capita GDP on the planet of around $5,000. We still have only $100 trillion economy. Like, what's that about? And so what I mean by that is, we need to be working together, universities and colleges, on a global basis to enhance trade and economic growth and economic success. And here in the United States, we need to be at the leading edge of that. You know, the way for the U.S. to win economically is to be the fastest, the quickest, the boldest, the most innovative, the most adaptive, and universities are a part of that, and globally engaged universities are a part of that.
We just have a couple minutes left, and I have a number of things I'd love to ask, and we're now getting a bunch of questions in as well, but I'm just going to ask you one last question. I understand that as president, you took a leadership team when you went to the summit. I don't know if it was last year or a couple of years ago. You took a bus from Phoenix, from Tempe to San Diego, and crossed over California and kind of made the point that there were no boundaries here. And I guess the not so much California, but I think your leadership has sort of showed how do you think about things where the boundaries change and how you can reimagine what things can really be as opposed to how they've been done historically. As you think about your leadership, let's say over the next 10 years, what are the boundaries you want to see? Because you're going to be there 10 years, at least. What kind of boundaries do you think need to get broken that can transform learning and kind of going back to the original goal of providing society with access to education that lets them participate in the future?
So one boundary we've absolutely got to eliminate is this fake boundary between K-12 and the universities and colleges. You know, so it's sort of like the universities and colleges wait and say, well, we'll take your best product. Oh, I see you have fewer ripe apples. I need to pick my apples really, really carefully. We should be working so that all the apples are fantastic coming out of K-12. And every college should be deeply connected into its entire, every possible K-12 connection that one can conceive of. Certainly every public college. And so another sort of boundary spanning thing going forward, I think is right now public universities in the US and even most of the privates are kind of regional. They are boundary constrained. And if they could break down these boundaries and partner in new ways, we formed the University Innovation Alliance 5 years ago, where 11 big public research universities came together and started figuring out how to innovate together, how to graduate more students, how to graduate more Pell Grant students from modest income families, how to innovate together, how to lower the cost. I mean, and so we don't have enough of that. So that's another trajectory. We've got to find a way to take the fantastic assets at University X and make them available at University Y, Z, Alpha, and Beta, you know, with the fair financial exchange, so that we don't have to keep replicating each other, so we can build more unique assets and share those between each other rather than just replication after replication after replication. And so those are three areas in which I think and hope that a lot of things can happen going forward. And we're working on that in every way that we possibly can.
Well, this was fantastic. I just want to publicly thank you for your leadership, your innovative leadership in the education ecosystem. I also want to personally thank you for your amazing support of GSV. We greatly appreciate it. I think the education community greatly appreciates your leadership. And so thank you very much. And this was a fantastic session.
Yeah, appreciate it, Mike. Nice to see you.
Great to see you.